It gives me great pleasure to announce we've been joined right now by Dan McLaughlin, who is soon to be a professional player on the PGA Tour, he hopes. Dan, thanks for coming on the show with us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
What?
And I really appreciate you talking about my project and talking about the ideas of, you know, talent versus deliberate practice.
All right, so you know who you're talking to here. You're listening. You're talking to the PGA Tour Network. You've got all hardcore golfers, lots of very successful people listening to your story right here. We've all been to the highs and lows of this game, which you not being a golfer a couple years ago, maybe you hadn't quite learned how the game ebbs and flows, but you're getting there now. So you don't have to dumb anything down for us. We're feeling your pain. First of all, let's start at the beginning. What made you decide to do this?
Well, you know, I had kind of come to an impasse in my life, and I decided that what I was doing wasn't as fulfilling as I had originally hoped 10 years ago when I started doing that, which was commercial photography. And I wanted to have a career change, if you will. And I had saved up money, and my thoughts was to go to grad school. And then I really kind of thought about it for about 6 months, the grad school idea. And I realized that with the money I'd saved and the amount of time that I would put into grad school, I could pretty much go out and attempt anything. And after, you know, another year of thinking, I realized that I just had always had kind of a calling towards golf. I had actually never played, but my entire life since I was 3 years old, I've always had this feeling that golf is what I wanted to do. But I just was never able to pursue it. But then I was finally in a situation where I literally could try it and I could devote all of my time to it. So I just decided to completely immerse myself and go for it.
Well, isn't that interesting that you've always felt pulled to the game? That part of your story, that is not documented anywhere. I've not read that. That's fascinating right there.
Yeah, there was actually a man who lived in my childhood neighborhood when I was about 4 years old. He gave me a left-handed tiny driver, and he said that, you know, he told my parents he thought that I was a natural, quote-unquote, with the driver, and that he really wanted to give me lessons. But literally a week after he gave me the driver, he passed away, and I never used it, never had lessons. And I think that idea just stuck with me through my entire life.
Wow. Wow. That's, man, so now there's a mystic quality to this. This is not just the on-the-surface thing you read in the book there from Malcolm Gladwell that says anybody can do anything with enough practice. But let's talk about that aspect of it. I mean, there's a couple of quotes on your website. Talent has little to do with success. I'm not sure I agree with that. The fact that you know, with enough practice, you can excel in anything. We just had an email about this. We talked about this a lot yesterday, by the way, Dan. That your definition of excellence, you may be shooting too high by trying to get on the PGA Tour. PGA Tour may be past excellence. So tell us how you arrived at the conclusion that this is what you're going to do.
Well, I actually, a lot of people credit outliers to my project. Whenever it's blogged or talked about, people say, oh, man's going after Malcolm Gladwell's theory. But the first thing I always want to say is that the research, Malcolm Gladwell's book's based on research of psychologists and sports performance experts. And one of them in particular is Dr. K. Anders Ericsson. And he's the person that I found and kind of helped develop this idea and kind of regiment the fact that I'm going for 10,000 hours, because in his findings, since he's been studying this since 1979, he's found that is generally any kind of outlier or uber expert in any field, that is the general amount of work they put into it before they, you know, hit their stride and say win their first Open or compose their first original sonata or what have you.
So, interesting.
It was basically, the plan was around that. And then, I mean, Gladwell just brought it to the popular knowledge through his book. And the book is good. And also Jeff Colvin's written one called Talent is Overrated, which is an equally impressive book that golfers should read because it's a little bit more golf specific.
Yeah, actually, they subscribe to that theory when hiring here on the PGA Tour Network.
Nice.
That's just—it's the truth, Dan. I'm actually wishing you a lot of success. To be honest with you, I hope this works because I'm right behind you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you know, one thing I want to say is that I'm not trying to belittle what a PGA Tour professional, what they've accomplished. And I think if any, this project is going to show just how hard it is and just how much work that all these men and women have put into it throughout their lives. But at the same time, I think that if you want to achieve anything, you really have to set your goals as high as possible. So that's why, you know, my goal is not to make the minor tour. My goal is to make the PGA Tour. And that is what we're putting in all the statistics for and what all the daily, weekly, monthly, and annual goals are, or, you know, to push forward and to get to that level of a golfer.
All right, on the website, we're speaking to Dan McLaughlin. His website is thedanplan.com. 10,000 hours he's dedicating himself. That's 6 hours a day, 6 days a week for 6 years, if you want to break it down that way. It's the way I've seen it broken down. I believe you broke it down that way. Going to make it from a non-golfer out to the PGA Tour. I've seen your swing, and you're not bad.
Yeah.
Swing looks good.
Oh, thank you. That was you saw the video online on the Dan Plan?
Yeah, which was from, what was it, last month? It was fairly recent.
Yeah, that was after I'd been doing a full swing for 2 weeks at that point.
Wow. Very impressive. And by the way, and you spent some time, you're up in Oregon right now, but you spent some time down in Florida because you're not going to be able to get in 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, you know, all in Oregon. You got to find the sun somewhere. Every professional golfer goes to where it's warm during the winter.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have a lot of rain gear, and I pretty much sleep in rain gear at this point. But I had some family down in Florida, so I had a free place to stay in February. So I spent February in Florida in St. Petersburg. There's great golfing down there, and it was 75 degrees, and it's, you know, 30 up here in Oregon. And next winter, I'm going to try to get to the desert somewhere, Palm Springs, Arizona, wherever I can. The only problem is it's just the logistics of it because this isn't funded by anybody and I'm not exactly winning any tour events right now. So I just have to go wherever I can afford to go. And golf is not the cheapest of sports to have picked.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to the money in a minute because as I deliberately want to leave that last because you say in your video that that's the first question anybody asks you. And it actually, the golf audience knows a little bit more about the price of this than the generic folks that are going to come up to you and ask you these questions. So, and you know this by now as well, but I want to know more about the game. So you've only been swinging at it, or the video was taken, you've only been swinging at it full swings for 2 weeks. How are your scores? Have you even gone out to try to score? Where are you at in your game right now?
Well, what we've done is we've worked away from the hole. So for the first 5 months, I only putted. I only had a putter, and I started from a foot away from the hole. And then as we got our numbers up, my success rate up, we moved further back, 3 feet, 5 feet. You know, eventually was hitting 40-foot, 60-foot lags, started chipping about 5 months into the plan. And so currently, I still have three clubs. I have a pitching wedge, a 56-degree loft wedge, and a putter. And I play from 100 yards and in. So when I go out and play golf, I'll play nine holes. I'll drop a ball from 100 yards, from 75 yards, and then from 50 yards. And that's my round right now. But one thing is, on the first anniversary, I actually treated myself, and with my pitching wedge and 56-degree wedge and putter, I went out and played 18 holes from the red tees for the first time.
Well, that's not enough club.
Yeah, it's not enough club.
How'd that go?
My goal was to break 90, and I shot an 89, so I think that was a good... You know, because I think I had 60 fairways in regulation. But I think that, you know, it's just like consistent short hits with the pitching wedge and then a nice little approach shot and hopefully, you know, a one putt. So a good little 50-yard up and down.
Yeah, you should be hitting a lot of fairways if you're hitting pitching wedge. I got to be honest with you. That should be, you should be not missing too many. Not going to say all of them, but you should be. So that's good. Dan McLaughlin, our guest. The website is thedanplan.com. So you you quit your job back in 2010. So it was just last year. Is that right, or was it 09? Give us the timeline. Where are you here? And I know that the culmination was it 2015? That was you're going to be finished with your 10,000 hours in 2015. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, I started on April 15th of 2010, which happens to be right around when the Masters is. So in 2015, it will have been, you know, the entire time, the 10,000 hours will be over, and it'll be right around the Masters. So, I mean, the odds of actually getting onto the Masters are probably 1 in 40 billion, but that would be a perfect timing. But a little backstory is, so I originally had the idea in June of 2009. That's when it concreted in my mind that I was going to do it. And then from June until April 2010, so for that about 9 months, it was just pure planning. That was when, you know, I found my coaches, kind of read as much as I could about performance, and then kind of built a general outline of how I would approach the game. And so it was just 9 months spent deciding what to do. And then April 15th, 2010, that's when I had my first golf lesson. And then every day since then, you know, 6 days a week, I've just been training to make it onto the PGA Tour.
And you're working with Christopher Smith. He's the main guy giving you lessons. Tell us a little bit about him.
Christopher Smith, he's an amazing coach. I think he's been ranked top 100 coaches in the nation. He's been, you know, Pacific Northwest chapter coach of the year, I think, a couple of years ago. And he also holds the world record for speed golf. He's one of the speed golfers, and he shot something like a 65 and 43 minutes once during a tournament.
Wow. I played that once. I played that once, by the way, Dan. That's not going to help you. Don't do that. Those people are crazy. I did it once. It was terrible. Of course, I don't really like to run, so that was my problem.
Yeah. I mean, golf courses are long, so if you don't hit the ball straight, you could be running 5 miles.
Yeah, well, even if you do hit it straight, you're going to be running for 5 miles, and I don't want to run 5 miles. So that was an inherent flaw for me.
It's definitely not a sport for everybody. A lot of golfers would prefer just to take a cart and, you know, have a couple of drinks on a Saturday afternoon. But Chris he's an amazing coach, and he's been coaching up here for over 20 years. And I don't think I could have really found a better person to help me along in this journey. And it's really, it would be completely impossible to do something like this without a good coach. You would just be lost. I mean, even he says, you know, I mean, actually he says you could do it, but it would probably take you 150 years to get there.
Right. So. And most people don't have that much time. Not everybody, but most. All right. Yeah. So clubs now, when are you going to play 18 holes with a full set of clubs? Do you guys have that planned out? Are you waiting to get to certain thresholds, or, you know, it seems like you're moving, you know, very deliberately. You have it all planned out. We want to know, when are you going to get some scores where you're going to get to see where you really are?
Well, it kind of is a couple things. I mean, because the two clubs that I'm working with now, the two wedges, really I'm establishing good patterns with contact and how to handle the ball. And all of that will translate throughout the clubs. So in the short game is so important that what we're doing now is taking a long time because of the importance of these clubs and actually scoring. And then I have two clubs sitting right next to me. I have an 8-iron and a 6-iron, and those are going to be my next clubs. And Christopher and I have talked about it. We'll probably pick up the 8-iron in the next couple weeks. And then basically it will be about one new club a month from here till next year. So my goal is to be playing with a full set of clubs by the second anniversary, so around April 15th of 2012.
Man, that's showing a lot of patience, too. I tell you, most folks would not be that patient.
Well, I think that's one of the benefits of how I'm doing is that I don't know what it's like to hit a driver. Is everybody I talk to and I say, oh, yeah, I go out and practice putting for 6 hours a day. They say, man, if I practice putting for 20 minutes, I would want to go and hit a drive. And me, I have no clue what it's like to hit a drive. So for to practice putting for 6 hours is just, in my mind, what I do. So, yeah. So it's nice to kind of have this structured routine building into larger and larger swings.
Yeah, I think that part, I mean, if you can be patient enough to do it, that part's not going to hurt you at all. I mean, if your goal is, the finish line is out there in 2015, and you can stay patient, then there's a lot of us listening that would love to have that kind of discipline. Dan McLaughlin, our guest, thedanplan.com is the website. All right, I got to ask you now about the money, because that's the question you say. Number one question is who's paying for this? And it's not just what's going on now, but when you start playing at the lower levels of professional golf, Dan, you know that can get more expensive than just paying for your meals. You're not just paying the rent over a six-year period of time now. When you start entering these events, if you're not winning money back, it can get really, really expensive. So talk about the finances.
Well, yeah, I hear you down the line. Basically, I saved up enough money to go to a four-year school program, pay for tuition, and pay for my mortgage the whole time and that. So it basically came down to roughly about $100,000 that I'd saved over a 10-year period. And so I'm a pretty thrifty person, and I'm always been a saver. So I can live off that for 6 years, as you said, pay rent or my mortgage, pay, eat well and be able to play golf. But I think that in the future, when it gets to the tournament stage and I am entering qualifiers across the country, and I've heard statistics where it costs $50,000 a year just to support yourself as a, up and coming golfer. So it's going to kind of get a little bit out of my budget eventually, but I'm a true believer that where there's a will, there's a way. And right now, the only thing I can focus on is getting to that stage. And when I've gotten to that stage, then something will just have to happen. Whether it's taking out a loan or trying to get a sponsor for the project or just gathering the support of followers that have kind of come along the journey for the first 4 years, whatever that way, or whatever has to happen is what will happen.
Yeah, and there's a spot on the website where you can actually donate. And I tell you what, if you stay with this, Dan, I like hearing the plan. Like I said, the discipline aspect of it would be the toughest part. You couldn't get any of our audience to go a year without hitting a club longer than an 8-iron. That's just we're not doing it. And the thing is, we all know that it would be great for our game, but we're not going to do it. We're just not going to do it.
I've met some people out in the putting greens who have become amazing short gamers, and the reason that they've done that is because they had a back injury and they weren't allowed to swing a club. So they focused for 6 months just on the short game, and now their score, their handicap's gone down by about 5 strokes. And I think that if you have the discipline and you're willing to put in that work, I mean, that is so important, that short game.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, we need to check back in with you. I mean, it sounds like you're moving at a nice slow pace. That's fantastic. Please let us know if there's anything we can do to help. I think there's a lot of folks fascinated by your story. They can follow you over at thedanplan.com. Website looks good, by the way, Dan. I mean, all the pictures and the video, you document your story very well. I think you did a very good job.
Yeah, that's,
very.
Yeah, that's and what I would expect, feel like we bring into this.
I would expect the photography to be good, since that's what you were before you became a golfer. and it is.
I appreciate that. One more thing, I just want to talk about the physical piece. I'm working with a physical therapist, Sean Daly, and Lake Oswego, and that has been such a crucial aspect to this as well. Because as a commercial photographer, I didn't really exercise, and just learning about the body and the movement and the mechanics of the golf swing over the past year, I think that's really been enlightening. And I think anybody who really wants to get better has got to hit that gym too.
Yeah, well, I think we have, you see that's a, you've arrived at that conclusion, and again, the entire audience already knew that. But the fact you've got that's not I'm not saying that in a condescending way. You're right on the money with that, Dan. So and we were all hearing that saying, yeah, guy's working on his short game, guy's working on his fitness, he's taking his time. There's a lot of goodness there. None of us really have the discipline to do that, but we do know those are the things to do. So. Sounds like you're on the right track. Are you going to be crushed if, I mean, making it to the PGA Tour is not just physical at all. I mean, it may not even be half physical, Dan. There's a lot of experience going to that. And, you know, the way the golf course, the way those clubs worked on day five of Q School is not how they're going to work on day six of Q School. Has anybody started talking to you about that?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I apologize if I come off as such a newbie, but this really is all a new experience to me.
Well, that's great. But, that's very refreshing, too. Don't apologize for that at all. We're fascinated by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole new world, and it's a brilliant world. And I think that there's, like, honestly no better game in the entire world than golf. It's beautiful. It's frustrating. It's a constant challenge, and it's the perfect endeavor. And, you know, as you were asking about Q School and day six or you know, any Sunday tournament, everybody talks about the mental side of the game. And that's pretty much the biggest criticism or the biggest obstacle that people bring up is that they say you just can't gain that experience of what it's like to be, you know, in the final, the 72nd hole or, you know, the final round of any tournament. And I mean, the only thing that I can say is that once I'm playing golf, I'm not going to be just out playing with my buddies. Like, as soon as I can play a full round of golf, I'm going to be doing nothing but competitive golf. I'm going to join as many men's clubs as I can. I'm going to have every amateur tournament that I can sign up for and just try to get that experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only way to know whether or not you can do it is to try. So as much as I want to say that I would have the ability, I mean, that's just going to come down to testing, you know, just testing it out and seeing how I perform.
Yeah.
Proof of the pudding, as they say.
It'll be a very interesting conclusion no matter what happens, especially putting in the physical part that you've put in. I mean, wouldn't that be interesting? Is there anybody else following along? Nobody's signed up for the project yet as far as other researchers, other golf interests. I mean, I would assume that the PGA of America may want to know some of your results and may want to know, you know, more of the process. I mean, you could be breaking some ground here, especially no matter how it goes. If you get through and you find out, well, you can't make it happen in the pressure packed rounds, or you actually can make it happen in the pressure packed rounds because of whatever reason. Is somebody other than yourself documenting this? Has anybody come out of the woodwork yet?
Yeah, there's been a few people, and actually over the last couple of weeks, I hooked up with a PhD researcher, psychologist down in San Francisco, California, who's created this spreadsheet for me, and at the end of every day of training, I just enter in all my data, and then in about a month from now, he's going to start building charts, and then I can put them up on the website and kind of show the progress. So I'm working with him, and then I've been working with another performance expert at UNLV, as well as Dr. Erickson down at Florida State. And I'm always up for suggestions, you know, or anybody who wants to work with the project or anybody who's interested in gathering some data, because it's definitely not a one-person journey. I mean, one of the biggest tenets about deliberate practice is that you need experts along the way. I mean, you have to have the right doors open, and you have to have the right people viewing you so that they can kind of correct and push you in the right directions. So the sports psychologists, it's really a privilege to work with them, and hopefully, you know, we can learn something from the data. And worst case scenario, if my project, if the 10,000 hours doesn't work for me, somebody can take that data, and maybe the next person, the next generation can actually improve upon it and blaze forward and, you know, reach their goals.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting stuff. I'm fascinated by it, Dan. We'll be on the air, I'm sure, in 2015 when the whole thing ends. That's not a question.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit of a question. But That's not a big one. But I cannot wait to continue to follow your journey here. This is good stuff. You know, good luck. You're showing a lot of courage in this, and you know, please let's check back in with you. Let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, please give me a call anytime. You know, I'll just be out at the course.
All right. I guess your work is done. Yeah, we'll let you get through some more clubs, and as you said, you're going to add one a month for a while, and we'll see how that's going. Of course, I mean, you run the risk of. I mean, I'm sure that somebody's talked about this. You've talked about being getting in physical condition for this. You know, the bigger swings you start making, you know, an injury could put you. You could lose a little time here. Are you worried about that at all? I mean, because you're practicing more than most people do.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what could potentially be the largest obstacle of the plan. And in working with Sean, what we're trying to do is just as the swing gets bigger, we're before that happens, we're building the strength necessary to not get injured through that training. So last winter and then this coming winter is all about core strength, basically getting ready for that drive. And I mean, all you can do is prevent or try to prevent injury. And so that's what we're doing, that and then working with a good swing coach to have nice mechanics. Cause I think once your mechanics get out of line and you start overstretching yourself, that's when you can really cause some internal injuries.
Yeah. That's well, it's good that you've thought this all out, Dan. Fascinating. To say the least, we will be following along. I think you made a lot of fans today. TheDanPlan.com is the website. Dan McLaughlin, we really appreciate your time and best of luck.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate you bringing me on and look forward to talking to you in the future.
No problem. Thank you. That's Dan McLaughlin. That's interesting. A lot of questions. I think I asked him all of them. So a lot of good answers, too. You know it. You heard it. You know you would be a better wedge player if you only hit wedges for a year. But you're not going to do it, and neither will I. But he's doing it. That's pretty good.